Hey, did you all hear about LBJ's private jet trip just lately? Did you get the word on this? He took Lady Bird with him, and Vice President Humphrey, and Bobby Kennedy. You know, you saw the new Time magazine, I think, that showed a picture of Johnson as a man of the year, and Kennedy kicking his shins. Did you see that? It's quite a scene. But he had these fellows on board, plus Dean Rusk. And they were cruising along, having a great time, and President Johnson really felt great. Man, he was just kind of rejoicing, you know, things were going good. Kennedy wasn't throwing too many barbs out to him. So he said, you know what I'll do? I'm going to throw a $100 bill out the plane and make some American happy. So before he could get the $100 out, Lady Bird said, oh, now, don't do that, Lyndon. Why don't you do this? Why don't you throw 250s out and make two Americans happy? Well, that's a pretty good deal. And finally, old Dean Russ spoke up. Said, you know what I ought to do? Be a better deal for you? I've got a suggestion to make. What you ought to do is throw 10 $10 bills out and make 10 Americans happy. Well, anybody? Any more suggestions? So finally, old Kennedy, why don't you do this? Why don't you leap out and make everybody happy? But if you guys can see that Alamo down there in San Antonio, don't miss it. I really got charged up on that thing. You guys can go down there and see that. Kind of gets you all fired up, you know, see the old story of Colonel Travis and Davy Crockett and all these guys. It really is well worth it.
Is it the real deal?
Yeah, they've got the Alamo. At least they, you know, they built it probably, what, 50 years ago or something, Jake? I don't know.
100 years ago.
Yeah.
Put a new roof on it.
Yeah.
The real thing.
You
can see it really the Alamo.
Okay.
They've got some side buildings that are not original.
Man. Get down there and see it. Okay, three things we're going to hit on, guys, the next 2 hours. One is, why work with servicemen? And I'll just kick off some things on this, and you guys can give some good ideas, too. Secondly, how do we establish a ministry on a base and carry on a ministry? How do we establish a ministry on a base and carry on a ministry? And then thirdly, I'd like you to do this. Right at the end of our get-together here, to take 5 minutes and write out the question that is paramount on your heart regarding servicemen's work. Something you just kind of, you know, man, I've got to get this question answered while I'm here. If you have two or three good ones, write them down. But I think if we stick with one, it'll probably be sufficient. And then we'll call a panel up here, some experts, and we'll go through these things, maybe give you a 5 or 10 minute break, let you walk around a little bit and come back and try to go over these questions and really make it helpful for you. Okay? Just some facts and figures. Right now, as near as we can tell, one reason why we ought to work with servicemen, there are 3 million guys in the military today. 3 million servicemen. Yeah, now that's going to be kind of a scattered outline, but we're going to hit on these 3 points, Joel.
Okay.
So one of the reasons we want to do it is because of the mass of guys, 3 million in the military.
50% of those are
poor guys. Thank you, Stan. And then, as you think of that, I understand that 60% of the guys were screened out because of one or two or three problems. It could be a deal that there's a moral charge brought against them. They were in jail or something, so they couldn't get in the service. They couldn't meet it mentally, so they didn't get in. And there's several other reasons, too, but actually these guys have been screened that are in there, these 3 million, to a certain degree. Sometimes you wonder, don't you, with the Army troops? Man, you know, if they screened them, how'd they ever get through? Yeah, that's what they said. Don't feel bad.
Those are the Air Force.
What's that?
Those are the ones at the Air Force screen.
They just fell in the Army pod, huh? Okay. But actually, only 40% of the guys make it military-wise. 60% are cut down.
Just 40% of the total available men?
Yep, that's right. That is it.
What's the third reason there?
Well, let's see. Physical.
Benefit.
physically handicapped.
So it's they're morally, mentally, or physically?
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
60% are cut down on these three deals. Okay. So as I thought about this, you know, here John Crawford and Stan are in the room here. 15 years ago, John got a hold of me in San Luis Obispo as a businessman and just kind of, you know, pounded the Bible into me for about a year. And Stan took me from there, I guess, another 6-7 months. But these guys kind of recruited me to work with servicemen. And I kind of asked myself at the beginning of this year, why am I doing what I'm doing? It's kind of a good question, you know, kind of self-evaluation. Why am I doing this? Why am I here, 40 years old, 42 right now to be exact, and why is it that I'm working with military today? Well, one reason is John and Stan recruited me to it. But basically, I see 3 million guys in uniform that need the Savior. And that kind of gets to you, doesn't it? 3 million. That's like L.A., Los Angeles, putting everybody in uniform and marching them around. That's kind of the magnitude of it.
They do have wars there.
Yeah, they do, in Watts and other places. Okay, 600,000, Skip mentioned this morning, about 500,000. They're pushing 600,000 in Vietnam today. Our troops are over there. So another reason to me is, man, if guys are willing to go and get shot at, good grief, they have priority to hear the gospel. So here are 600,000 guys in Vietnam, roughly, are over there, kind of defending our country. We believe most of them are there for that reason. So they ought to have priority on getting the word. Okay, and I just did an interesting study on this from Time Magazine, other articles I get a hold of. In the Navy today, there are 900 fighting ships, the U.S. Navy. And guys, I'd like to come back to this a little later in discussion, just to discuss what else we can do to reach these guys aboard ship. Because even on the West Coast, I have to be honest here, we're deficient, I think, in reaching the shipboard personnel. We're really short on this type of guy. So where are these guys home ported? You know where they are. Newport, Rhode Island, Norfolk, San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, Bremerton. What else?
Jacksonville,
Long Beach. Yeah. So roughly these 900 ships are in these areas, and for the most part, we are located in these spots. God has sovereignly led us into these spots. So if he let us in here, we ought to make sure that we do what he wants us to do. So another good reason, because he's led us into these areas where these ships are home ported. Then you take the Air Force, 15,000 planes, fighter planes, 5,000 in Vietnam today. 5,000 fighter planes there. And these guys are kind of like the ships as I see it. They kind of go over and come back. It's like the big old carriers and other ships. They go and come. Isn't this right, Bob? I mean, they're over there for a while, and they kind of come back again. They're kind of in a state of flux all the time. So then I thought about now, as Leroy mentioned yesterday, the Air Force, just get a world map, kind of, and you see the Air Force all around the world, you know, with the Marines, zingo, you know. Where are they? Pretty much right in Vietnam. In fact, if you want these figures, about 12 combat divisions in Vietnam today. This includes, I understand, the Army as well as the Marines. And we have 20 combat divisions military-wide. 12 of these in Vietnam. So then thinking of the Marines, we talk about the Navy, and we're in most of these ports working already. Think about the Marines. Now here's Potter from Camp Lejeune. And the bulk of the guys going over are either from Camp Lejeune or from Camp Pendleton. These Marine troops come out of these two areas, basically. And we're in these spots. So you can kind of see how God has led us in the past to go into these areas and to get something going. Then I think that, as I look around here, I see John sitting here, and he was a deep sea diver out in the Pacific, South Pacific, in the Second World War. I see Jake over here, reached at Treasure Island, got underway for God at TI. Roy Robertson, I understand, they were bombing Pearl Harbor, 1941, And you know the story, you probably heard him give it. But he went over to Harold DeGraw's that day and got the B rations and started in. And fellas, I can't help but believe this. Here's Jim Downing, another excellent example about the fifth navigator. But if God has done this in the past, he'll repeat the process, right? My dad's kind of a self-taught historian. He's always said this, Bill, remember this. History repeats itself. You know, kind of a basic statement. And I think for 20 years, I kind of, well, what's he saying? But guys, I'm finding this, that spiritually, this is true. That spiritually, if we've gotten fellows like John and Jake and Doug Sparks, came off of TI as well, Jim Downing, out of the U.S. Navy and out of the service, then God's going to give us a lot more if we hang in there. That's the way I feel. And let's get a few more of them just like these guys. Some of the advantages, you know these pretty well. I'm going to run through them kind of quickly here. Apart from what we've already shared, the reasons why, I think that the service fella is available. We had a young guy, Joe Retina, in our home not long ago, and just kind of had the wax kind of out of his ears. Stan had worked with him a little bit, I think, and kind of gotten him going up there in the Northwest. He came down, and here he was, just kind of, now what do I do next? Take this pack of verses, and here's what you do. He kind of, you know how you were taught, get him going. And he said, oh, by the way, going over to Vietnam in a couple months. Boy, as soon as we heard that, click, I put a guy in charge of him. You take this guy and just map out everything he has to do for those months in Vietnam. So Dick Bars was assigned that duty. Figure out what he needs over there so he won't go down the drain. And just map it out and require this out of him. So Bartz went to work on him, and this is one of his strengths. And I believe old Joe's hanging in there. We keep hearing from him, and he's right on top, living in victory. But the guys are available. You know, no big thing. Going to Vietnam. You know, here a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid going to Vietnam. No big thing. And I got thinking about my brother-in-law, who's on a wheat ranch, 5,000 acres of wheat, and 35 years old. I don't think he's ever been out of the States. He loves the Lord. He has six children. So I'd go to Chuck, and I'd say, Chuck, you love the Lord, and you've been asking about what kind of service you can do. We need a fellow in Japan to help direct the center over there. How about going over and assisting? You know what he'd say? You're out of your tree, Greenaway, you know? You've had it. You're off your rocker. Never. I'll never leave here. Man, look at this, 5,000 acre spread, and I've been out there, $50,000 home, right out in the middle of the desert, almost, I call it, but it really is, and it's a big piece of plains. And there he sits out there in a terrific home. But to get Chuck to move, available, oh no, never. But Wojtina, Vietnam, couple months, bingo's over there, see, no big thing. This kind of guy later on, no problem for him to go across the world, see? But for a guy that's got his roots and tentacles down so deep, he's not about ready to move. Well, we know this, but just to repeat it. And then the right age bracket, we believe this is certainly a key. And then another good reason, advantage of working with servicemen, they're taught discipline and submission. And boy, when we don't see this, it really makes your heart go out, you know. Up at Hamilton not too long ago, we had a fellow. And he said, you know, I saluted the colonel, and he said, Larry, forget that. I'm your friend. Never salute me again when you're on this base. Boy, I talked to old Larry. I said, buddy, I'd keep on saluting him because you're going to have to do it when you leave Hamilton. You need to learn how to salute a colonel. But can you imagine a colonel saying that? Don't salute me again. I'm your friend. The Air Force, yeah. Who are they saying the Marines? Well, let's say for the most part, they do learn discipline and submission. Now, we get a little meeting going on the Marines over here on the discipline. They kind of balance out what the Air Force doesn't get, I think, sometimes. But anyhow, the Navy kind of is right down the middle. They get enough of it where they don't ram it down the guy's throat, but he kind of responds pretty well. Is that right? Okay, and it makes a guy prove his faith. I was over in Germany in 63. A guy named Bob Loudon, a sergeant, pretty good-sized guy, pretty well-built. Bob was told, "I am so sick of you living the Christian life. When I come in tonight, out of my mind and drunk, I'm going to get you out of that rack." And this guy remembered that. Of course, old Bob, well, he won't do it. He'll come in just, you know, drunk, totally out of his mind, smashed out. He won't remember it. The guy remembered it, came in, and took his rack and turned it clean over. And old Bob came flying out of there. And he said, "All right, I want you to fight if you're a Christian. Let's see what you can do." And this old, of course, he could hardly fight. He was that drunk. But he clobbered him and caught him one right here, busted open his face. I had to take a couple stitches later in it. Old Loudon said, "Where can I go?" I took off into the shower. And the guy followed me in there and caught me on the other side and opened his eye up. And then the guy kind of just got out of it and went back to bed. The next morning, he knew what he had done. He came to old Bob and he said, "Why didn't you fight me? Why didn't you hit me? You should have killed me." He said, "I didn't know. I would have 5 years ago. But Christ came into my life." And he just shared his testimony. And I never heard that guy came to Christ, but I understand that he didn't go around hitting Bob anymore, you know. But old Bob had to prove his faith. 5 years ago, he's a pretty good-sized guy. He could just take him apart, especially when he's drunk. But he said, "I just wanted to show you what Christ had done." So they got to prove their faith. Other guys will get boots slung at them and everything else. And this is a good point here. I was talking with Jim on this yesterday. That when a guy gets up in the service, he is under scrutiny from that minute on, isn't he? I mean, I have an hour. I get out of my bed, and I can kind of kneel first. I generally kneel down and pray first and commit my life to the Lord again and say, "Lord, you take over. I'll goof it today and blow it unless you come in and take over." Then I kind of fall back and do a few sit-ups and a few push-ups, and I get about 45 minutes or an hour in prayer and the Word. And I can come out of the room kind of conditioned for the day. You know, I can see the guys in the home and everybody, and I'm already conditioned. But the guy in the service, when he gets up, he doesn't have that time to get conditioned. He's got a bad attitude. Someone's going to see it and throw something at him or kick him or punch him, isn't he? That's what happened to a lot of us in the service, I think, you know. So he doesn't have time for conditioning. Boy, when he's up, and everybody sees him. This is another point, I think, that he's under scrutiny 24 hours a day. We've got to prepare him sometime for this. All right? Then another point. He can learn combat tactics in the service that will help him in the Christian life. I really believe this. When I hear old Lee speak, he came to Germany, 62. He was talking about sniper fire prayer during those days, you know. The guys always stood him over there. You know, he got all the GIs together, and he was talking about sniper fire prayer. And he said, "What I mean, I don't mean machine gun fire prayer, where you just kind of scatter your shots all over. God bless everybody. But I mean that prayer that's specific that zeroes right in on one guy. Sniper fire prayer," he called it. Well, where did he learn that? In the Marines. Sniper fire. So I kind of think that he has really taken what he's learned in service and applied it in his Christian life. So you can do this. You can learn a lot from service life. All right, then another point. Most servicemen are easier to talk to about spiritual things than any other category of men. I believe this. We tried, about six of us, tried to, if you want to use the term, crack the University of Cal, Berkeley campus. And we took some pretty good guys out. Remember old Pat Moran? You remember him, John? Some of the other guys do. It's pretty strong guys. We felt we had college material, college men, graduates, or at least two or three years of college under their belt. We tried for 6 weeks, about three nights a week. We didn't get one convert. Just hit a stone wall. Then we said, "Well, let's go to Treasure Island and do the same thing." Went out there. Within a matter of a couple, 3 days, we had two or three babies running around. You know? Easy to talk to about the Savior. But those guys at Cal, you know, my God is science. My God is mathematics. And they could mentally run circles around you. But the GI kind of believes everything, kind of gullible guy, you know, you tell him something, he kind of just takes it in, and Man, that sounds good. I better believe in the Savior too. Good deal. So they'll do it. So actually, they're easier to talk to in any other category, I believe. Okay, and it teaches a guy, well, we all almost touched on this one already, to leave home and country with very little adjustment. But we probably ought to just underscore that. Then it provides cross-training. The service provides cross-training for a fellow at the military's expense. And we have a lot of cases on this. We had a guy come in, Keith Dunham, came to, I'm not sure, our area, no, Rogers area first in San Diego. And one of Rogers' guy, I think Bob Van Kirk, Roger, if I recall, got him underway. Pretty soon he is up in the Bay Area, about 400, 500 miles away. And we helped him there a little bit. Then he goes back down to Rogers' area. He helps him there a little bit. Back up. And he's coming along. Cross-training at the military's expense. And as I think about Treasure Island, we could say that God has taken fellows like Ed Tharp. Bob, I think of him now. You know, a guy that was there, just got saved at TI about 2 years ago. Left there and went to Whitmo Bay. And here Bob gets a hold of him here and does a little more building in his life. This is one of the strongest guys he has. So he's come a long way. And I used to look at Treasure Island kind of being, well, it's a bad deal because the guy's only there 40 weeks in ET school and they're gone. But now I say, praise God, 40 weeks, let's do all we can and see that he ties in when he leaves here. So we're finding it's a tremendous area. Okay, and then basically they are financially and socially unencumbered. As a rule, a service guy doesn't have a lot of dinner appointments, does he? Huh? He doesn't have too many deals. He has to go out to socially and have a big blowout, you know. His nights are kind of free. Money, when I got out of the Navy, CBs in 45, I had more money then than I've ever had in my life. Really. I had more money when I got out of the service than I've ever had prior to or after the service. I've never seen that much money, really. Overseas quite a while and got paid off and got back and a lot of dough. A lot of money. So the guy that says, don't have much money, he's running around with a tape recorder strapped on his back, you know. Will you pay for that, John? Oh, $150. Yeah, well, you got some money somewhere, you know. Don't tell me you have any money. They've got money. Sometimes they have to be instructed most of the time and where to give it, though, don't they? They need a lot of direction on this. But the guy's got dough in the service. Okay, and I think, too, another point is that they're easy to band together. Banding service guys together, I don't know what it is, whether it's just having a uniform on or being in the U.S. Navy or the U.S. Marines or Air Force, there's something about it that's easier to rally these guys than other categories, I believe. Okay, and then last point. The guys in the service, they really see men as they are, don't they? Romans 1 style. Boy, you hear every kind of cuss word. You see every kind of thing. You see men unrestrained. You see them uncouth, just like they are, huh? And I think it's good. I've been on bases with guys like in Germany where that, I think of one sergeant, you'd go on the base with him, and even though he's kind of a masculine-looking guy, he didn't know how to answer the guys when someone laid down a blue streak on him. You so-and-so, so-and-so. He was in charge of the gate, and he wouldn't even say anything back to the guy. He just kind of keep walking, kind of hanging his head, you know. Other guys, you get cussed at, turn right around. Let me tell you about this, brother. And just in a nice way, he'd be off the witness. But there's something about it that if a guy wants to, he can learn how to take it on the chin and still win a hearing and get his witness across. They really learn how to work with men and live with men in the military, I think. We all, probably all of us learned this in the service. I think of an ex, not an ex one, but assistant pastor came to me one time and said, I don't know how to talk to a man about Jesus. I've been through Bible school, seminary. I've been preaching for a while, but I don't know how to talk to a man about Jesus. How do they live out there? How do you get close to a man? I can give a good message on a platform, but I don't know what goes on out in the big life. Boy, isn't that pathetic? But the guy in the military, he knows what goes on. He knows what guys are like. No problem there. Man, he sees sin in every form. Okay, I think with that, we'll probably just throw out some questions here and let you guys answer. We've got a pretty good cross-section here. How many of you are from the southeast here? Let's see your hands, kind of get an idea. Okay, West Coast, see you guys. All right, Rocky Mountain. And let's see. How about East Coast? Do we tie that in with the southeast? Anybody else we're leaving out?
Southwest.
Two? Good. All right. I'd like you guys to kind of just get a little, we need cross current, really, because we need to know what you know and vice versa. We need to pass it around a little bit. So rather than giving these things out, I'm just going to maybe kick off with a question, have you guys give the answers. How do we go about selecting a base? What are some of the guidelines that we use in just selecting a target area? You've got maybe five bases close by, and you get a chance to go on them. The door is open. Maybe the chaplain says you can minister on these bases. But how do you actually go about picking out a target and getting on the base and starting a ministry? So that's the first one of these kick off right there.
Yeah.
Contact groups. In other words, we say a key contact, but a guy that knows the NAS, he's been around a little bit, and he just transferred in. Okay? Good. All right. Stan?
The factor might be what I refer to as a sort of a spirit of freedom on the post. Like Fort Lewis, whether you had a guy there or not, we didn't have a guy there. Whether you had a guy there or not, it's free enough, it opened up, you drive through the gate, and four donut shops and fish snack bar and meet people. And there's no problem eating.
Mm-hmm.
They're just there and they're so harassed that they're not going to run away from it. They just kind of open free. And you can catch them walking on the sidewalk and be in Christ, as they walk along. Compared to other people.
So how could we say that then? Yeah. What would be the
panel?
Uh-huh.
It's the atmosphere of the base.
Okay. Kind of a permissive atmosphere, wish to work or something like that. Openness. Okay. Good. Good. All right.
One thing that could be a help is to get a resume of everything that's on that base. Find out how many are officers, how many are enlisted men, how many are married enlisted men, how many are in single men in barracks where you can get to them. Some of them, as soon as they're off the job, they're gone. They're
mm-hmm.
out of town or live way over the next town. It makes it difficult trying to get to those people. You can't hardly talk to them when they're working. How many are available on off hours?
All right. Very good, Jack.
How many are in school?
Very good. Okay. Ron?
How do you go about bringing that information to the tribe here and there in San Diego and never come up with anything like it? Say, okay, now I finally got the scoop on this place.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've a little bit here, a little bit there, but I'm still, there's certain unknowns still. I'd like to get that kind of information.
There's a book you can get that has it all in the book, every base.
Really?
Yeah. How many men, how many, you know, where kind of major deal.
The communist bookstore. Work it. Can we, Singapore have one of those? Red China.
Trying to dig this information out, you can be encroaching upon securities, which is, you really have to be careful. Mm-hmm. You don't want to push it too far if it's not readily available.
All right. Good. Stan and Bruce.
One thing we did on, we just got our leading at Fort Lewis, we went there. And when we got there, we find out there's many organizations on that course. It's really a massive thing going on. So we spent a whole week or more thinking we could reach available thing we could. We got together in the chapel, we got a few men, and we pumped them for what they do about that place.
Mm.
We got some little maps and stuff out, and we tried to find out. And we asked all the questions we could think of, got things in writing, and we approached it. How long the guys are there, how long they might be there for, which ones are harassed, which ones aren't, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we go down and we make decisions.
Okay, that's good. You all get that? That's good stuff. Yes, let's see, Bruce and then Mel.
I was just going to say that if you happen to know the chaplain, a lot of times these guys are maybe after getting their kind of information, it's not suspicious. They did it.
So you can get a lot of it through the chaplain, you mean. Good. Uh-huh. Without making him feel, though, I think many times I probably have pursued when I should have backed off. I think with some chaplains, you have to just go kind of careful. That's right, because they kind of feel you're trying to move in, you know, and kind of gives them a little fright.
It's nice to have a layout of the base, and generally this is an item that has restriction or something stamped on it, but if you inquire and ask for a bus route, usually it's a map of the base with the bus route laid on it. You got it.
Huh.
Chinese or whatever.
That's good. Yeah. Ron? Good.
No, an officer. Well, they can get just what you need. We got it right down to the man and everything and maps. So they got buddies, you know. They call somebody and say, I'm Captain so-and-so, and I'd like to know about who should I see. And
would you would you keep that in mind and maybe give us a little rundown later on working with officers? We want to talk about that because we haven't really gotten into that out in California.
Another place for information, you go to the public information office on the base. They have information they can provide the local public, churches, the newspaper, they can give you a lot of scoop that are geared for that. And if it happens to be a base where there's a lot of security, they can only go so far. But you can get it, and it's free information.
Okay.
They give you anything that can be publicly given about that base, you get some information on it.
All right. Any other thoughts on this now? How about the where the base is located? Is that important? I think that's important. Joe?
I feel that's real important. If you know, one more isolated, better.
Mm-hmm.
We're right now on what they call a miracle strip. And it's summertime, boy. There are thousands of things.
Yeah, that's very important. I think that there were times when I didn't believe that, and I tried one base, Butzbach in Germany. I tried on getting on that thing for about a year, and I felt, you know, sometime pride enters in. You say, well, I can get on this thing. I mean, after all, I've gotten on other bases, and I never was able to get on that thing, get any guys going. And then Harvey Soderholm came over, and of course he wanted to try it too. So Harvey, go and try it, but don't waste much time there because we spent a year and didn't get it. Now you go ahead and get it out of your system, but give it a couple of months and then forget it if it doesn't work. So we should know what bases not to be on as well as which ones to go on. I think that one in Butzbach for some reason was right in town, and the guys had liberty every night or leave, they say, or, you know, overnight pass. And, man, they were just right out the gate all the time. In fact, they were out the gate more than they were in, I think, you know, outside running around the town. So we found out the hard way, don't go to Bootsbach. So get something out a little bit where the life is a little bit hindered.
Seems like you think that they should give you the caliber of man you
want. All right.
And also it had an impact on the rest of the areas that you want.
Good.
Another factor you enter in because of the continuousness of the base itself for the rest of the whole fleet.
Mm-hmm. That's what we felt at TI too. He said that yesterday. I kind of felt that's why we're there, you know. And I think that's it, John. It's one of those bases where they're not there. We like to say a year at least. The guy's going to be there, but 40 weeks they're up and out. See. But God has given some tremendous men off there, so you just have to work another plan and realize that. Yes, Jake.
This raises a question, and I'm brand new at this, so I feel free to ask. Can you give me an illustration of a base where you would not want to work because of the caliber of men? You said look for a base that has a caliber of men. Do you have an example of one where you just write it off?
Okay, good question. Let's see. Stan and Bob has... All right.
I think the first impression before Lewis, you ran it off because the caliber there is going to be low and the morale is going to be very low. And on the other hand, there are some outfits that are known to have a higher caliber than some of a good caliber. So that all fits in here. We can just find out. But generally speaking, it looks pretty low.
So you're working primarily in certain groups of men where the caliber is high.
Well, you have to pick a target within the post of 75,000 men. It's very complex. You pick a target there, and our target happens to be where the chaplain said help us, where we had key people, but the caliber is real high. But we know that there are some places where there is higher caliber. Keep that in mind. We may have to move around a lot.
All right, we've got Bob and Rick and Dean. Okay, Bob, you have something on this?
Well, remember when I first started in service to work out in Texas, there were times you take deputy volunteers, resources, and so on, back to Monday. So we thought of more moments of work. I remember down in San Francisco, we were on the largest gathering of soldiers in the world, and I understand that. There was one particular base that was, I was going over to tell us why we shouldn't go down there. One of the reasons that it was very strong was the fact that we wanted to make the Pentagon up. So there would be an example of a base where I would not go because there was such high ranking officers in Mexico. I think I could work with them in security as well. But that's an extreme.
There's one other extreme on that same. There's five bases in San Antonio, and two of them we couldn't go. One was Kelly, and the other was Lackland, which is basic
training.
They won't let you
on the guy. Mm-hmm. I like the Marines.
Now, my question, Bob, here is, he mentioned caliber of men.
Well, that was too high caliber. Right now, low caliber, the Pentagon fund, we could probably get the next.
Mm-hmm. He's going the other side of it.
Yeah.
Dick, maybe you had something on this.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking not of writing off the base because of the caliber of men, but giving it a lower priority.
Yeah.
In other words, I think that enters in.
I'm not familiar enough to realize. See, this comes as a surprise to me that there are some bases where there are a bunch of stoops.
For instance, Memphis, Tennessee, for instance, is a school. It's an electronic school, mechanic school. So you get a caliber man who is thinking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so you're getting a good caliber man.
That's good. Okay, Roger, and then Ron.
You agree to that, don't you, Jake?
I would, except for one thing, John. I know an example from that.
Good. Good deal. Raj?
I think, Jake, it's not always the base, but more a stand situation. For instance, infantry units tend to get the lowest mental caliber in the service.
Mm-hmm. You want to give a testimony, Ron?
I was on a base that was even lower. We were a transportation club, and all they did was push cargo.
Yeah.
And load and unload cargo, 2,000 troops, and they were just strong back, weak on people. That's, you know, that's a variety of
facts.
That's, you know, you wouldn't
excellent. Get that if you were good. This helped, Jay?
Yeah.
Kind of gives a little picture of it. We have more on this, Bob? Another question?
I was going to say, I guess we're accepting all the rules, though, because infantry, we have contact with. I know one guy's a college graduate, another guy, junior in college, so two out of two.
Yeah.
That's pretty high college.
Okay. Joe?
Well, this is not the same thing. I'd say that 50% of the fellows we run into have college. My name, they're all taking them in. This is really starting to change in every service. Education.
Mm-hmm.
I think that war has influenced that a lot. I think the war has brought up the caliber of men in the military. So many guys are leaving college and getting.
Okay, well, we talked about the caliber. Any more on this? Any questions or something to add? Any contributions? Yes,
another
Paul.
Another thing in selecting a site, say, for in a region, is the type of men that you're working at. On one base, a likely place to start new work is where some of these men are transferred. Like, men go back and forth from Charleston and Norfolk all the time in the Navy. So it's natural to work those two bases.
Mm-hmm.
You may have some other bases in the area be a natural, or in the region, to be a natural like that.
That's good. Yeah, a little network set up. Uh-huh. Bud and Bob and Mark.
It helps to have a chaplain that's
yeah, it really is. Chaplain relationship is imperative, isn't it? At least that he has an openness. Maybe he's not sold on what we're doing totally, but at least he'll let us work there. You need that.
I'm not convinced of that.
Yeah.
I was, but again, Fort Lewis has a little gate. Just go down to 35 in the morning.
See, what I'm thinking, Stan, is that, like, here again, back to TI, boy, we've had godly chaplains out there. Chaplain Dave Plank, then a chaplain Wilcox, and now a chaplain Baxter. Kind of just men that, like, God just molded for TI. And they just opened that door so wide to us that they say, now, just, you know, take these men and lead them to Christ and train them. So we have a chance of doing a work in depth that 40 weeks are there, where if we had maybe just part of his approval, we'd have to get him off the base and do a little work in the corner somewhere. But this is kind of a good example of... Yeah, right. That's right.
So we found where a going chaplain program is, it recruits men for us. Man, you can just walk in the chapel. Non-Christians, everybody, when they've got a big going program, you just walk in, and then you just side look next to the guy, and he might be a non-Christian, he might be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the comparison of the bases we have in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we get many more men quicker on the bases that have going chapel programs.
Right. Good point. Maybe just one question and one mention on this, too. Another word. Just that... In contacting a chaplain, I found this. It's better not to set up a lot of appointments. I don't know. I just throw that out. See, we're on this. I have found when after he's spoken or given a message, like in the evening, and he has a nice coffee hour, you know, that's the time to talk to the chaplain. You say, I want to see you at 9:15 or whatever your convenience. I want to be there. I've gone in on those deals, and boy, you get in his office, phones ringing, people coming and going, and somebody just died, and he has to call somebody, you know. And it's almost so hectic that he feels you're kind of encroaching on his time rather than just, boy, it's relaxed, standing with a cup of coffee in your hand and just finished a good message. So I kind of feel I've operated better. In fact, the guys we have, as a rule, operate better like at Travis, Bud, and Vern, just to, after that Sunday night deal there, just to get around, mosey around, talk to the guys, and Chaplain Anderson's there, Colonel, and just no problem, you know. If you try and see him in his office, 100 phone calls every hour about, you know, every half hour. So for the most part, I'd say try to see him after a meeting, or something that's worked good too here is to have him over for lunch. Well, we've had chaplains over for lunch in our home, or have met at an abstract location, like downtown we have a nice place called Biff's Restaurant, and give him the directions how to get there and meet him there, and terrific. And then you're not sitting across from his desk, and you're kind of the subject out there, and he's the big ranking man, which is all right, but you don't really cover much ground. But you're sitting in a restaurant, or in your home, or with a cup of coffee in your hand after a chapel program. The ice is broken, and you're right there with him. There's no big problem. So, yes, John?
He's going to do the study.
Yes, all right.
I'd like some remark as to where we are in our overall work in regarding to recruiting the men to do the work themselves. For instance, in the Air Force, obviously, then things will be done at the academy. It's going to be done by cadets, those who can't get it. And for instance, if these people were suddenly on the plane and killed, would our
reservists work? That's a good point. See, who would be the most, maybe, yeah. We're going to go. Oh, that's good. See, I wonder, maybe someone like Paul, would you have an answer on that, Paul Drake?
We had that kind of situation when we started D.C. at Fort Myers, where we couldn't go into the rooms. We either had to catch a guy in the lobby or somewhere else in the base. They didn't have a snack bar. They had a bowling alley, but it didn't have much traffic. So after we contacted a couple of men through the lounge, we got these men to take us to the rooms, and we couldn't go to the rooms, but they could knock on the door and say, hey, I'm Joe Low down the hall. And we got them working on the inside like that. And I think it did a lot to encourage them as evangelists, because we told them, you know, we can't get in, it's up to you. And we presented to them that way, and they grabbed the ball and ran with it and spit it over.
Okay, any other situations? Maybe Dick?
He's still going in Memphis. Guys, any more of them getting saved now?
Okay, and Joe?
I think if we could see God really play with this in a man's heart, this division, this is what I keep relating to these men, the fact that you are the man on this part. You're so bad a man here. God is the word for you, is that basically, you know, brainwashed for this thinking. So if you were to take them away, you know what, they don't make that straight.
Because that has to be the end product, doesn't it? Because we won't be there all the time. We're not in the service. Bob?
Maybe I didn't quite understand. John, when you said recruit, did you mean to recruit the man to do the work we're doing, or to recruit him for the day to one day to come out here and out today?
No, I think you're recruiting for reproduction. In other words, in the early days, in World War II, there were about 6 civilians. And we know of 2,000 men who were carrying on the work in the Vietnam Army and in the Navy. So at that rate, we got enough in this room to take.
Take the whole Navy. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Are we thinking in that direction? Or do we, when we get together next year, do we need to increase this group 15%? And then in 10 years, we would have a conference for just servicemen where it would be three times as big as this 120? Is that the group?
I think that's an excellent question. In fact, I think this is what I wanted to get onto on this shipboard ministry, John, just that what are we doing to see that the guys on the ships are doing the ministry when they leave the port, you know, out in the pond somewhere. And that's what we have to work toward. I think on the bases, I really feel that we're doing almost what you've mentioned here, that we get the guys going, so we're not going to be here for several days. Now, you're the one to do this and this and this. You're the ones to kind of do the ministry on the base. We're not going to do it. You have to do it. But I think on the ship, we've missed it. At least my own impression has been this. Any other thoughts on this before we move on? Yes, Dan?
John, if you thought that the situation that you described in the past had a great deal of bearing on the fact that there was a war going on at that time, or the Second World War. Do you think that's quite an important part of that?
Yes, I do. And I think it has a tremendous part. But I wonder, are we justified in our proportion to take, you know, 6 to 2,000 that we know of? I wonder, are we justified now with what we got now in civilians, what we got in producers or the reproducers or the cycle builders?
All right. Here's what I'd like to go on to gravitate into this. This is really in this area. How do we actually do the work or the ministry on a base or aboard ship in some cases? What are we doing to ensure what John has shared here, that the men will do the ministry when we leave them? So how do you go about your ministry? Maybe you ought to say this. Give me a week at a glance off maybe several bases here. What do you do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday with men? Could kind of give me your, you know, give us the week schedule, maybe just out of your mind. You pretty well know what it is. And what are we doing during these nights? You know, we can just have a get-together to have a get-together, but what are you doing like Monday night when you get the guys together? So why don't we just kick that open now? And this may help answer part of John's question. Okay? Anybody? Roy?
On Tuesday night, this team evangelism, five teams, in one area.
Okay, team evangelism, Tuesday night.
2 hours. We're taking the rest of the team involved in evangelism. 2 hour program. Time for these men to meet the family on the coast.
In the same way, Wednesday night, and another full Air Force thing, same drugs. Thursday night is putting all of the people, all the contracts we have in one central temple for one.
That would be all these fellows incoming in?
Yeah. We're working primarily in three areas called corporate meetings. On Tuesday night, full Air Force Base, and on Wednesday night, Special Forces area, which is 12,000 troops, on Saturday and Sunday, and it's a team operation. I think the thing here to help us down is thinking is that Dave Rover is working with Bob Pratt, Spec 5, and 2 hours in another area to do evangelism. But the objective of training Bob Pratt, and then as a team, there's opportunity to critique and pray together after this very decision.
Now, on your Thursday night, Roy, when you get together in a central chapel, I believe you said, what actually goes on there? Just kind of give us some idea. What would be the format?
Well, last Thursday night, we sang two songs from Potter, the employment experiment, and we called it Testimony. And this break up into groups with the ministry team, taking the one to the four guys in the Bible study, and we would be with us.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, we took up coffee and we got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ron, do you have a question on this?
Just something in answer to John's question. I was trying to evaluate what's happening on our lands. I was thinking of the Bible study leader. You know, that's actually leading Bible study and leading in evangelism. All our servicemen, the four of us, and of the four of us, all of us were raised up in the service.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I wonder at TI, just the case now, Bud, are the guys that are leading the classes and doing the ministry pretty well all servicemen, or do we have our men in there? I've been there for a while.
Past shift has been civilians leading the classes. TI is such a big difference. About the time you get a guy ready to lead a class, he shipped off. One man coming up, and concentration will be now more trying to get permanent personnel, but we do have two men in classes now out of four classes.
Okay. Yes, two Bobs and Joe.
Well, I think it was an interesting thing, and thinking when you mentioned that, like in our ministry, that we have two people that in the ministry
I think something has helped on this. We've had our guys doing this. Is Lauren's latest deal on evaluating your ministry? You know, we've had the guys turning in reports. Although it doesn't tell a lot, it does show you how many guys are coming to Christ, California wide. Which ones do we feel are discipled? Which one are key men? And we have potential staff down at the end somewhere. Now this kind of gives you some idea, you know, where we're headed. Kind of, well, you look on paper, and it tells you that much at least, where before I wasn't ever quite sure. So I think just having to do this has helped, knowing where we're headed in this area. Let's see, Bob and Joe and then Lynn.
I just had one thought on selecting ministry area. You'd look for an area that would have a decent percentage of permanent personnel. Those guys that don't deploy on you.
Okay, good. Joe?
Yeah, I did the same thing he said on the you should have a man to
Good. We should always be ready for that, right? Yeah. We may be off there. Okay, Lynn?
Well, just thinking of the small military base that I am at, and one of the objectives that I said originally was to get a man on all the major continents of the world in the Air Force and that particular base. This has helped considerably with me. I had a fellow tell me earlier on the beginning of the ministry, told me I didn't have any ability in training the guys beyond too far. And, well, by the way, he was right. I think the one thing that really helped me was the fact that I put all my effort into the guy so that when he left, he would be able to accomplish or take up a ministry, whatever I taught him at that point when he got there. And this has happened. I've got two daughters who used to stay at one from Holland and one from England. So I think maybe early, if we can communicate this thought to the guy, that whatever time he gets to pour into him, that at least he can
you may be the Nehemiah. You may have to start building your own ministry and wall when you get there. It's good. I guess the person
is. Asked about, you were saying that the guy who goes out someplace and he starts with another, he knows what to do, again, that's where he is. Maybe he's just by himself so that he can sort of duplicate the ministry someplace else. So, I'm
just wondering if we're kind of working with that, if we're doing that to prepare the guy to start out without the context of leaving there, and continue to come to get stuck out there. If not, we better, or we're going to be in trouble. That should be one of the main objectives. Absolutely. Okay, can we go on then? Any other fellows would like to share just your week at a glance? What do you do? Maybe just one night if you'd like to take. What do you do one night to really build in the guy's lives? Any other thoughts on this before we pass over? This is kind of a key point, I think. Yes.
We're moving into a transition period, but there was a time that right up to this point right here, making another switch, but where I was not right up to this point right here, making another switch, but where I was not going out to the naval training and the big base where we've been doing all our eventuals. I was using that to go up to Pendleton, and so the service guys themselves were carrying out the whole role of evangelism on the base. While I was trying to help guys get things moving up the penalty. And so the guys there have really learned to carry the ministry.
Okay, good.
But it started out by first working with one guy, so I turned it over.
All right, Harv?
I think one thing we learned on the schedule that was real important was to keep business matters.
Right.
Friday night was our key men's Bible study, the most advanced group, and we're about 12 in that one. On Monday night, we have four advanced Bible study groups, and they were led by the fellows in the home and one by me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were about 20 involved in these studies on Monday night. So the Monday night and the Friday night groups taught the Tuesday night groups.
Mm.
And then Saturday we had sports time, and Saturday night fellowship at a service center. They let us have all the facilities for our use. And then Sunday was at our home in the afternoon, and the guys came and we had dinner with all the men and broke off for chapel services.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Very helpful. Some good ideas there. Okay, yes, Bruce?
When did they get individual time on the guys?
When was the individual time kind of given out?
All in the home were full time, all five. And so, I think the record, one guy got a personal time of 33 men 1 week.
Good grief.
And, but I think these guys got on an average of personal time with 20 guys a week. And we had our follow-up set up in such a way that the first night a guy came out for Bible study, from that time until he left the island, he had personal contact every day.
Hmm. We've seen some men from Harv's area, in fact, quite an abundance of men coming through. So God really is blessed. Can we go on to almost the next one, which is right in line here? How do we recruit men to the Lord and to the NAV vision? And that's a big one. I want you guys to really chime in on this one. How do you do it? Yeah, right. Well, your key men should be saved, Joe. Let's assume the guy is saved, because we have talked a little bit about evangelism so far. Let's think now about how recruiting him now, how we can recruit him to the Lord and to the NAV vision.
So you mean how to recruit him to discipleship?
Yeah, I'm thinking of 2 Corinthians 8:5 here, Jake, a verse that, you know, that these people gave themselves to the Lord first, into us by the will of God. And I guess that just, you know, there's a certain amount of recruiting to the Lord, should be all to him. But then there has to be some allegiance to the guy that's trying to help him. You know, a little faithfulness to that guy and availability.
Well, there's some good guidelines, I feel, in Acts 16 when Paul came through and recruited Timothy. There's just a few guidelines that, you know, you could use. He came to Derby. There was a certain disciple there named Timothy. Timothy was a disciple to begin with, had a heart to the Lord that was available. So I'll say he was a disciple. He was walking with the Lord. But now this can be a different degree. Maybe he wasn't even memorizing or anything like that. But I'm just kidding. And second, if this is possible, I don't know if it could be in all cases, he was well reported of by the brethren. Another key that you don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a pretty bad background.
Okay.
So Paul took him, in verse 3, and circumcised him. I feel he was teachable.
Good. Good. Proceed.
And then in he took him with him. I mean, he didn't just see these things anymore. guy you recruited. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a guideline that it's not my own, but available, teachable, well reported of, and a heart for God, a disciple.
Okay. Good. Any other things we use, or Dean?
I was wondering, though, if these are the principles that have been recruited man throughout this, because this may all will apply to Mark as well. If Mark didn't stay, so Mark wasn't really recruited to the vision or the command. He was the Lord's, and it came on later, but. We'll see in that why Kennedy State fall necessarily.
But you mean if you ran into a Mark type?
Right. Mark evidently had qualities enough to where they thought they should bring him too, as they brought Timothy. But Mark didn't stay. So,
he was already tied in with another man, I believe. Mark had been recruited. It's just that Paul was the one who was on his trip.
Acts 15, that's true. Mm-hmm. Barnabas and Mark kind of tied in.
Mark,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Mark was back.
That's right. He couldn't trust him, could he?
Well, no, he went with Barnabas.
No, well,
Mark
this.
Barnabas had mistaken that Paul's note to turn back. So Barnabas had all taken anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Barnabas still.
He wasn't afraid. Oh, Barnabas took a calculated risk, you know, a little more than Paul did there. Yeah, okay. Good point. Yes, Jack?
I keep it on a pretty simple basis. If I'm feeding the guy and he liked what we're doing. I suggest to him, look, when you get out of the service, why don't you come back and help us? Mm-hmm. I suggest it to him. Both guys, they don't think of that. You know, That's just a simple thing. I mean,
power of suggestion.
It's the same thing about man-to-man time. You know, the other day, a new guy, and I said, hey, why don't you come out and get some time together? He said, what for?
I see what you mean, Dick. I see what you mean by caliber.
Yeah. Jake sees what he means by caliber now, Dick. Paul?
But even
go ahead, Jack.
Guys that we only have just a few weeks.
Dick, we're talking about caliber of the men, not caliber of the teachers.
Good.
You say, John, if you don't tell anybody, I'm on. Well, we can assume this, though, but if we just flat don't lay it down there and make him early count on
yep.
it, and he's geared to count on it the time he leaves. See, if you just pop it to him, here's a sharp.
Very good.
If he's shipping out to another base, that's a hook as far as I'm concerned.
That's terrific. We've got a hands up all over. Let's keep this on this frequency now. Paul, then Raj, Dick, and Bob, and Stan.
What's
okay.
the frequency?
What, recruiting men. What do you do to keep
recruiting men?
Yep.
The first thing I believe is we've got to win his heart.
Okay, win his heart, all right.
And then the second thing, we've got to give him some tools to do the job with. Or maybe the second thing is the vision, giving the vision, giving the tools to do it with, and then challenging to get with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of kick it every once in a while, see.
All right. See, Raj, I guess you were next.
Well, I was just thinking,
we're saying we're just meeting a new young Christian or something like that.
Right.
Well, when a guy comes to Bible study, we have an introductory session with every guy who comes to Bible study for the first time. And all we do is sit down with him, reach the hand to him, and then just go over the hand and then dwell on the concept of Bible study, why we do it, the value of Bible study, lay out the books, kind of give an idea of what are terms of doing this kind of Bible study, teaching how to really learn the Word and so on. And now we leave it now. If this is the kind of Bible study you want to do, then this is what we expect out of you. And we, you know, then you buy the form and come back next week. And so he, from the, we try to explain to him why and where we're going to take him from the start.
Mm.
And the same thing is true in. And the idea, I like to expose him immediately to our objective as a group, the idea of the vision. Just very simple, don't you know, but, you know, kind of what we're out to do, what's happening, and how it, you know, put a handle on the world vision, so how this base relates to how we're going to reach the Navy, and you know.
Mm-hmm. A little imagination there, and real imagination.
Try to deal with him on how he can play, how important a role he himself can play if he's willing to take the steps to walk with the Lord. So from the end, and deal with him on this basis. And I just by, from the very start, telling him where we're going and what we'd like to see, and how we can help him to do that. And then I find one of the greatest things for young Christians, they all want to know how to witness. If they know the Lord and they've tried to serve Him, they have a burning desire to be able to witness effectively.
Hmm.
So I play on that to get them in the book.
Hmm.
Because most of them think Bible study, scripture, and you know, all that sort of stuff. But if you can show how those things relate to enabling him to have an effective witnessing life, fruitful life, that kind of puts a hook because they want to witness.
Yeah.
And I find that helps.
Excellent. You know, Bear Bryant, Alabama coach, this is what he does. He gets, when he took over down there, he went down and told the guys, he said, you're a fat, sloppy bunch right now. He says, but I'm going to make a championship team out of you. We're going to take it this year. And he got aside with every one of the players and told them, here's what we're going to do. And here's how you fit in. He just kind of laid everything out before him. We're going to be a championship team. He got each guy aside. Now, here's where you fit in. You got to block like this. You have to tackle like this. You got to trim off the weight. You have to harden up. And we're going to win the championship this year. And next 7 years, he won. He's still winning, you know. And it works. It works. Yeah? That one kind of made me sick being from Oakland, but you're right, Joe. My heart's still bleeding on that one. Okay, we had others back here on this, Dick, yeah, and Bob.
I think another big recruiting factor, I don't know how many men that I've actually seen recruited because of the opportunity to witness and how they take the world. Most of them will come because they have personal needs.
Right.
They know where they can get that help. And I think very few of the fellows that I've seen in Norfolk that have been recruited, and they're recruited on the basis that they're going to, you know, a big ministry. I think they're recruited on the basis of what I've seen, you know, the idea of getting personal help from self and having victory. And I found it, Jack, well, I'm not as, I don't know what I asked him. I just kind of sit down with a guy and I say, you give your life to about three or four different types of things. And I listen and I say, now what year is he? He's afraid. Kind of when you give your life to.
Huh. Kind of give him a choice, huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
We give their life to something else. We just send them a postcard. Put the first John 1:9 in our phone number and you can say, use in that order.
Good grief. That's a different approach, isn't it? What do you put out there? Kind of bus driving job and then hamburger cook? Go over that again. Put 1 John 1:9 at the bottom. Okay. Yes, we're going right around to see Bob and Joe, Lynn and Marv. Okay?
The illustration that Jack used yesterday, I think that about in the city, Skip stuck his arm around the walk with him and then turned him off his track. Communicated to me because you stick your arm around the guy, you win his heart.
Huh.
And you start going with him, winning his heart. But as you're turning him, to me this is my pressure.
Hmm.
You're turning him in the direction you want to recruit him into, and you keep the pressure on, and then as you get him
And when you win his heart, you get him in the Word. I mean, whether or not he's fit for your team, you've got to find his and us in that context. And then this is part of the job.
Terrific.
You can find the pressure to your direction, you're turning him. And I use Bear Bryant's term of life. You want to play tough on Saturday, you've got to play tough all week. And we play tough all week. Because you want to stick with us, you've got to play tough. And this sort of wins his part. And if he doesn't respond to that, praise God. But he's got to find the team.
He knows what he's passing up, at least, doesn't he?
Besides growing up, you know who's passing
up. Yeah. Phil?
On this recruiting, I know I have a lot to learn on this stuff. You know, I've seen fellows that weren't recruited for different reasons and negatives on them, and then I've seen other men recruit them and see if God really makes that matter.
Right. Good point. Good point. Let's see, Lynn and Marv and then Stan. Did you have your hand up, right, Marv? Scratching your head, Lynn.
I imagine how you recruit a man would probably vary somewhat how long they were with you and various other factors. But someone made a remark that a man will be with you as long as you know that you're meeting his needs. And that you are concerned about him. Mm-hmm. I think the men that I've seen come along, I think they're with me because they have had their needs met. This has clicked with them. They're excited about what they're seeing happen, what has happened in their life. They're satisfied with it. And I think the men that will be recruited will be the men that have seen it happen in their lives. And they get excited about it and want to see it reproduce in another life. And I know this is true with me.
Mm-hmm.
I was reaching the service and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So why not keep on going?
Yeah. Terrific. Stan, you had to...
Well, something the rest of us that is that we've seen guys from Fort Lewis who aren't around very long, come around and they're close and in it, and they go to Victoria or Vietnam, and we may or may not hear from them. So what we're thinking about doing there is, generally speaking, get a guy through the Bible study 1, 2, and 3, the little basics in 3 weeks, then go through Bible study giving in 15 minutes, which is the rest of the week, and then get the giving to us.
Good.
Where the treasures are hiding, and we're getting money, money. And we've asked guys who've been around for days, and they're leaving. You said they'd like to give to us. Because if you do, boy, you can have a partner in ministry. You can't get along without it. And then that'll keep your heart with Peter every month. And I'll be writing to you. So that could be fun. Miss that with Mr. Bailey.
Excellent. That's a good contribution.
You just have to spell it out to
them. Well, you
give to me. I have real hard problems with that.
Y'all
ask you got to give to my sport. I really have no problem with it.
Why?
Yes, Bob. We'll help you out, Jack.
I don't know.
I'll ask
Rusty. I'm doing it, but it bothers me. It's real cumbersome.
Well, you know what? I think it'd be good to get some time with Russ on this and other people. Really, I think it's terrific. He's got some good stuff.
Their money that is going into the lives of the guys sitting under the table and people that you're ministering to.
That's their ministry, not your ministry alone. They're having a part in God's ministry through this particular method, and boy, we don't have to back us back.
That's good. Real
you
good.
You have to give it yourself, you know. They're not giving a part.
Good. All right, listen, we've been here 90 minutes, would you believe that? And we want to have you guys write down a question that's uppermost in your heart. Maybe you had them all answered, I don't know if you have or not, but we want to knock off in 2 minutes here, write out your question that's uppermost in your heart, paramount right there, you want to get it answered. And take 5 minutes to do that, hand them in, we'll have a little discussion on those questions. But let's answer, Dick and then Jack.
Also, I've seen Ron turn around and the guy didn't have money to go home on meeting. He just said, here, and that guy didn't give it. Out of his pockets, and that guy climbed home. So I
great.
Think it's a
two-way street. Two-way street.
These guys are a part of abandoned men. I've seen, with another guy, doing it all in paper work. So I think it's not just one way.
Good. Okay.
How much did you give it to take? Why?
Okay, Harv, and then Stan, we better cap it there. And
just wanted to say that I think it's very important to teach a fellow from the scriptures on giving. And sitting down with him personally, not in a class, but personally, and I usually share my own testimony on how God started working in my heart on giving. And I take him from why, where, when, who, and what for. And so when you get through this, then you get into 1 Corinthians 9:11, where Romans 15:27, where Paul said, if we impart unto you physical things, is it a strange that you should impart unto us physical things? And, well, they kind of get the point. But I think as you take them through a scriptural pattern on it, they not only want to start giving, but they get excited about their giving. And unless a guy gets excited about his giving, I feel the guy's got a problem. And frankly, until a guy is giving about 50% of his income, I don't feel I've got a key man. I don't tell him that, but I watch him progress. And I also don't suggest that a guy start with 50%. I encourage him to start with 11% or anywhere between there and 20%, but not over 20% to start with on the value basis of Malachi 3:8-10. And see if God will bless. And if he does, then give us more.
Good heart. Yes, Dan?
I say it's more than a two-way street, I think. I think your team from the start, the guy coming in from the team, even in the beginning, ought to be soon learn to be willing and eager to share with any member of the team. Not just two-way. But then when I get back, we've got one guy who needs a car, and I think the team's going to get the car from him. And they'll be willing, because they ought to give so they're both going to help each other. Because they're all both they can. There'll be some in there who have money. We need to help each other.
Equality.
He gives
the togetherness. Mm-hmm. Something else we'll do. Good. Okay, Ron, could you share just a word before we write down our questions on recruiting officers? What have you found has helped on that? We need some good scoop on this.
Well, what happened is they goofed up with the post chaplain when I first got to Benning, and they wouldn't let me get to the enlisted men too much. So I got some experience with officers. And we've at times had up to 13, and they shipped off to Vietnam, and we're up to 15, mostly for Army captains. Some of the rest of you probably had more experience than the Army's had because of their experience with officers. I can share what my experience has been. I just jotted down some sort of summary things while we were discussing here. Some rules, just a few, and I may think of others to ask questions. I put four down here. That initially segregated meetings, not having enlisted men and officers together, or you'll have some young enlisted men shaping up an officer and it'll really turn them on. And then this man should not go out in evangelism in his own area. But we do take officers out in evangelism and other types of the post and study clubs.
This is
to enlist and taking them out. That's where they should get their experience cold turkey, because you may only get one shot at another officer.
Good point.
One officer who went over to Charleston, he went out to evangelism with us. He nailed some boy, and this guy told him off, and he said, "You're not a chaplain, are you?" And he said, "No." And he said, "Well, you're sure blankety blank no officer, I know that." Well, this kept him humble for 2 or 3 months. Then number three, you should narrow his target down. He's got too much responsibility, and he takes his worries home with him, and that sort of thing. So we've been challenging him to do some evangelism to learn how, and then go after some other officers. But only go after one or two.
Now, that being a BOQ, or just not necessarily?
All of ours have just about been married. I've got a comment on that in a minute.
Okay.
Narrow his target down, because he doesn't have the time an enlisted man does. But he ought to be trying to evangelize one or two. Now, those are just four rules that we've been applying. I had never put them on paper just this way. Narrow the target. Excuse me. Fourth one is to emphasize growth. Okay.
In the context of law enforcement officers, do you fellows find that it's good to mix on the team officers and enlisted men?
We've done it. But initially, I said we segregate, and so it was later on that we put them on a team. And so I put Bob Lovin under an ex-enlisted man. He was his boss. He's a civilian now, but he knew the ground rules. That was his boss. He took it. He got a lot of experience in cold turkey evangelism. And then when he hit the officers, he had proof. Because he was bold as a lion. And he had already done all his goofing up with those enlisted men.
Poor guys. Okay, Art.
He was married. And you were going to draw this distinction, right?
Yeah, that's...
Okay, see Harv had one question maybe before. Did you have something
more? I just comment on this, that we always had officers in our Bible studies for 4 years we were there. But the studies were geared to the enlisted man, and the officer either fit or didn't fit. And so if he came in new, he went through the study just like anybody else.
Okay. Some can just naturally fit in, can't they? And others can really never fit in, seems like, to EM ranks.
Then I listed a couple of conditions. These first few are just kind of rules. But we've run into this type of condition with these people. Number one, they're mostly couples. Mostly couples. They are mostly couples if you go after officers. Now, I'm kind of sold on this when a man becomes a captain, because it's the lieutenants who are sowing the wild oats. It's the captain, brand new, who's got maybe one or two young children. He's still in our age bracket. And he's stable, and you already can see what kind of a girl he's going to marry, and you got the going thing right away.
What? You see what kind of girl he's going to marry?
He's got one, he's got one already. Come on, you don't have to wait to see what.
Okay. Now, Ron, how about the BOQs? Have you done anything there? Why can't we reach the young officers? Because he wants to run around too much or something? Isn't there a way of getting to those young guys?
I just don't have an experience factor. Everything we've got at Lending are captains, just about a few lieutenants. Maybe somebody else
okay.
has got some.
Have we tried it in the BOQs? Just Paul, how about it? Are we done any? What's, are they?
Yeah, next to impossible. They've got two together in this. 90% of them.
Who would like to try some impossible?
Do you? Well, we've got a man who's going to try it in D.C.
Good. Keep us posted on that because.
Yeah. Right,
this base in Germany.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yes, Roy?
Very credit.
Okay, maybe we're wasting their shot sometime then on it, huh? All right, should we hold up on it now? Any other comments on this before we want to... Is it on this?
Yes,
okay.
It is. You know, we go on the basis of... he ties in with the team and hits the big target, the backstrokes of the OQ.
Hmm, okay, that's good. I like that. That sounds
good. Bill, could I just give that second condition?
Right.
To get comfortable. And secondly, that they are more conservative and they take more time.
Hmm.
The enlisted men, you can get them excited about anything. You sell them the moon. But the officer will say, are you really sure? Or, I'm not so sure about that.
More conservative.
And he takes more time.
Okay.
I just say this about officers. I had one in Sacramento that I reached for the Lord, and the social pressures were just too much. At first, he was going along fine, but living with about three other friends, he told me one day, Lamar, I'm just not willing to pay the price. That was it. Later, he left there and went back home, and I had a letter from him not too long ago. He's married now, and he's blessed the Lord. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, the social pressure.
Okay, and Paul, we'll cap it right there.
Bruce Carlson had the same experience when he was in Special Forces.
Huh. Okay.